But again, I don't know the exact ruling on the timing. I know there was a player out of bounds, touched the ball first. Is there 1 second? Is there not? The clock in the stadium, the clock back in the Big Ten Center. There's a lot of moving parts that I'm not going to pretend to know everything about. But wow, what a finish, you know. My biggest thing was, like, I'm shocked they're storming the field. That was probably
not everybody beats Western Michigan.
Let's get it. Hey, it's Chuck. We are not bemoaning the noon kickoff. We are now owning it. It's a badge of honor. We're the lunatic fringe that defines our coach's legacy when it comes to this game. They don't get to define that outside the family. Dude, we're cut from a different cloth for Ohioans. He's got it all, man. He's even got the jaw. You know the jaw? You see that jaw and you're just like, yeah, man, that's a dude. Do I want Michigan to beat Oklahoma? No way in hell. I don't know what world I'm living in. This is insane to me. And if you saw my outburst, I apologize. It's showtime now. And welcome into Juck on Bucks. Appreciate you so much for joining me. As today at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, Ryan Day going to take that podium and for the third time in as many years, talk about a matchup with the Texas Longhorns on Saturday. One of the biggest games of the early season in all of college football. Certainly one of the biggest games on Ohio State's schedule all year. A top five matchup as the Buckeyes going to head down to Austin this weekend and take on the Horns under the lights. It's going to be an amazing spectacle. I can't wait. It's supposed to be incredibly hot, which potentially favors them. But Ryan Day's practice has moved towards the evenings for the last couple of weeks since classes have started, and it's been really hot in Columbus. So the Buckeyes feel prepared on that front. But a couple of years ago in 2024 in the Cotton Bowl, Ohio State, Texas, first year of the 12-team playoff, the Buckeyes end up winning that game 28-14. In a game that was much closer to that final score, but a game that also could have been much different had the Buckeyes not shot themselves in the foot on several possessions in the first half. Last year, the Horns come up to Columbus in a game that was also very close that Ohio State held back and was able to win, holding back on Julian Sain's first start. They could have put more on his plate. Ryan Day said that after the fact. The game was close. Sure, it was a 14-7 game. And Texas, after the game, Steve Sarkisian, really after the season, made some comments about that particular game that I didn't agree with. But Ohio State wins that one, and now the return trip to Texas. And the first series, the first home-and-home, back in the Mack Brown Texas era, Mack Brown, Jim Tressel, they split the home-and-home. They each won at each other's place. Will we potentially see another split this time, or will Ohio State win three in a row? As of now, the Buckeyes lead the all-time series with the Horns 3-2. They've only played five times. And luckily, since I started this show, I've got to be on the air talking about all three of these, which I absolutely love. Like these games right here, regular season, out-of-conference bangers, I absolutely live for them. You've heard me piss and complain about all of them that have been canceled in recent years. I can't stand it because these are my favorites. I love them way more than the postseason. This is where it's at for me. In the Texas program, I got a great deal of respect for Texas. Not just everything that they are as a program throughout the history of college football, but that they're still a program that is testing themselves in games like this. That they're still playing this game. Because so many coaches we've seen cancel these things, coaches and ADs, and Texas had every reason and excuse when they joined the SEC to cancel the home-and-home against Michigan in Ohio State, and they didn't, and I respect the hell out of them for that. And nobody would have been any of the, like, nobody would have talked about that anymore. Like, that'd have been gone. Nobody would have remembered. Everybody's doing it, but they didn't do it. So a ton of respect for them for playing the game. And you can't tell the history of college football without the Texas Longhorns, one of the eight traditional blue bloods of college football. The first year I started this show, I was talking with a Texas fan in the comments, and he said something to the effect of, like, Ohio State's a great program, right? But it's no Texas. And I could not believe that. And that perception, I felt like a lot of people had about Ohio State because Ohio State has lost, you know, on the national scene, some games, some bigger games, national championship games. And that was standing out to a lot of fan bases as though somehow Ohio State was a failure for getting to those games and not winning. And I just wanted to rank the historical Blue Bloods. I wanted to see where they all fit together in the history of college football by using 11 or 12 categories that we would all agree, okay, we could judge one program against another using these categories. And I picked 12. You might pick a different 12, but I think we'd all agree that they're all valid categories to judge one program versus another with valid stats that you can count. And my contention in doing that was not just that Ohio State was a top three program of all time, but that Texas, in fact, was the eighth ranked of all the blue bloods. USC, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Texas, Alabama. Those eight programs that Texas would finish dead last. And when I got done with that, they absolutely were dead last, even with Nebraska sitting dormant for 20 years. Texas, the lowest ranked blue blood in those official Juck on Bucks rankings, of which all mathematical, none of it was my opinion other than what categories to use. That was all I weighed in on. Ohio State was number one. So there you have it. When you compare Ohio State and Texas in the major categories, this is what it looks like. The winner of the category gets the color, okay? So you see all the scarlet, and you see the one single burnt orange. That single burnt orange is bowl wins. Ohio State with 62 puts them fourth. Texas with 63 puts them third. So Ohio State might just catch them and surpass them on that this year. I hope so. But a top 10 program nonetheless. By the way, if you were wondering, it's Georgia number 9, Tennessee number 10, Penn State number 11, LSU number 12 to round out the top 12 programs in college football history. But in this current climate of college football, with the way the sport is structured right now, and it has been for a little while now, I think there's three programs that stand at the top of college football in terms of fan support, financial support, brand recognition, brand value, national interest, drawing the most eyeballs. In the final category, which excludes one of what this would be four teams on this list, but there's one more category for me, and that is maximum motivation to win a national championship every single year. In the top three programs in all those categories combined, Ohio State, Texas, Notre Dame. You look at the stupid patches, right? The patch sponsorships and the battle that Ohio State and Notre Dame just had over the patch sponsorships, which they're essentially the same deal. Notre Dame did their second, thus got it beat by a couple of million bucks. Texas hasn't done theirs yet. Maybe they'll beat both of Notre Dame and Ohio State by a couple million bucks because that's how those things kind of go. But Michigan hasn't done theirs either. They'll be right there with them. And Michigan is right there with them in almost everything else except the desire to do whatever it takes to win a national championship every year. They don't have the fire in the belly for it. Otherwise, they wouldn't settle for 10 to 15 talent acquisition type numbers. But Notre Dame no longer settles. Notre Dame did settle for a long time because they wanted to do it their way. They definitely are all in on trying to win a national championship every year now, doing a great job in talent acquisition. Obviously, Marcus Freeman, one of the best coaches in college football, most people think. But Ohio State, Texas, as big as it gets. And you used to be able to just talk about the Nike brand, the value of the deals, Nike deals. It was Ohio State and Texas and everybody else. Things have changed a little bit on the brand deal front as Tennessee and Penn State double Ohio State's deal from Adidas. But of course, that's not based on actual value. Adidas just, you know, needed some flagship programs and massively overpaid for it. You got the new money programs, the Oregon, the Texas Techs, and those programs, sure, they can compete just as much as Texas and Ohio State to win a national championship right now. But when we talk about legacy, history, they're babies, man. They're babies compared to the Blue Bloods in terms of success. It would take them 100 years of successful football to even catch them. But this is as big as it gets, man. As big as it gets. And two of the most, I don't know, what lightning rod coaches in college football, I guess you could say. Ryan Day, for different reasons, catches a ton of heat nationally. I don't know what it is about him that people love to hate on him. But nationally, he has always gotten less respect, I think, than he deserves. And as far as Sark goes, if you're not a Texas fan, like Sark gets clowned a ton. Sark's been incredibly successful at Texas. Ohio State and Texas in the last three draft cycles have combined for a total of 60 draft picks. 60. And if you're an Ohio State fan, you might think that Ohio State's carrying that. They win with 31, but Texas has 29. Like, these two guys are running their programs at peak capacity, and Texas is at the top now, and they're not going anywhere under Steve Sarkisian. It's true, he hasn't won the big one yet. He isn't the perfect coach yet, and I've got issues with some of the things he does and decisions he makes. I feel that way about Ryan Day as well. Texas fans, they got some issues with Sark. There's never going to be a coach you agree with on everything, but Sark has brought them back. His plan, his execution, his culture has brought them back to the top where they haven't been since Mac Brown had it humming in 2005 and 2006. Now, Ohio State never left. Ohio State always there since the entire century, Ohio State's been there. Texas was gone for quite a while. They're 100% back now. And Sark, a guy who had some troubles, a guy who now his second blue blood job, I think people forget that, coached at Washington, coached at USC, a blue blood head coach, lost his job, had some personal struggles with some alcoholism, got his life together with the help of Nick Saban, gets the job at Texas, and, you know, we're off and running. And he's definitely proved his merit. Texas and Ohio State also, two programs that are doing roster construction for the most part. Nobody's identical, but they do it very similarly. They do their roster construction very similarly. For instance, Texas this past offseason, they went and got what they thought they needed to win a national championship. Didn't care what it was going to take to do it. They went and did it. And that comes with that that fire to win at all costs. Like, we're going to win it every year. We're going to be in it every year. Obviously, they go against each other on the recruiting trail. But you look at Ohio State's 2024 portal class. It was the same type deal as what Texas did now. It was just a different era. We've seen the maximization of these portal classes every year. They get a little more, when Ohio State did that, there was still this kind of shroud of, yeah, we don't want to look like we're spending too much money. It was still kind of under wraps a little bit. It's all the way out there now, man. Nobody gives a damn. If you spend more than the next guy, more power to you. So as far as Texas's portal class this year and Ohio State's in 2024, I feel like it was a very similar thing. Like, we're almost there. We got an opportunity here, here, and here. We're going to go take them. And as far as recruiting goes, they just do things very similarly. Texas will shell out a bigger buck for a guy here and there. But overall, these programs are run very, very much the same. And now they get to play again for the third year in a row. And I cannot wait. But Sark has done a great job. Obviously, Ryan Day, one of the three best coaches in the country. When we look in the last 3 years, programs that have made multiple playoffs, you've got Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Indiana, Georgia, all with multiple playoff appearances in the last 3 years, and all programs that are favored to make the playoffs this year. And this is, he's one of the most successful coaches in the business. He spoke today. So he talked Monday. We'll get to some of his comments. We know how difficult it is to beat a team three times in a row when you are fairly even match programs almost everywhere on the field, when you spend similar amounts of money, when you got smart people leading the organization. And the Buckeyes have won two in a row. But every year, each college football team is now so different from the year before. And Steve Sarkisian talked about that in his press conference Monday when speaking about the Buckeyes and the Longhorns.
Just like this year's different. You know, we're a different team today than we were, you know, 3 years ago or two and a half years ago. And they are too, you know, and they were a different team last year than they were the year before. When you talk about, Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson, those guys were real factors, obviously, in that game 2 years ago. You know, last year, they had some elite defensive players. You know, I mean, they had three of the top 13 picks were on defense with Downs and Reese and Styles. And so everybody's changing and evolving and playing to our strengths. Like I said, last year, I thought we ran the ball really well, and I thought we defended the run really well. I don't think it was about physicality. I think it was about our inability to execute the other half of the offense to get points on the board when we had chances earlier in the game. And then I think the biggest common thread in both games was we essentially played behind. We were playing from behind in the second half, and that's an uncomfortable feeling when you feel like you're having to play catch up. You have to take a few more risks. And so, you know, that's probably the most common theme of the last two. I felt like both games were a little bit different. Even though the scores were kind of similar, the game, the flow of the games were a little bit different. And so, you know, ideally we can put a few more points on the board earlier in the game, and maybe change the math a little bit of how the game goes and not feel like we're playing from behind in the fourth quarter.
The Texas fans, even the ones that are fans of him, and they aren't all, there's some people who, you know, they're feeling like he's not winning enough big games and he's got to get it done this year. But even the ones that really, really like him feel like this is, you know, a no excuse year. You can't miss the playoffs no matter how difficult the schedule is. And you got to beat Ohio State. This is your third crack now. And you've been given everything you want as far as coaches pool, as far as talent acquisition money. And this past off season, you bring in an all-star crew. Now it's time to go get it done. It's time to go with your number one quarterback in the country, the number one player overall, Arch Manning, now in year four, his second year starting, his third year starting games. You've had the opportunity to develop him, to make him exactly how you want him. You handpicked him. That was your guy. All of this combined, like, they're expecting a national championship. They're surely expecting to beat Ohio State this year. And we get to see it this weekend. You bring in Cam Coleman to pair him with Ryan Wingo. You get two of the best backs in the country out of the portal in Hollywood Smothers, Relik Brown. You bring in one of the best corners in Bo Masco, Rasheem Biles, who's, you know, tearing it up at linebacker right off the rip for them. And this is it. This is the year that they, not Ohio State, have the four potential top 15 draft picks. When we look at these two rosters, most people, I think, would probably this year choose the Texas roster. Last year would have been the Ohio State roster. So Ohio State number one in the country, and they're number one because Ryan Day getting the benefit of the doubt as he's won the national championship. Sark hasn't. But this Texas team to me feels like, I don't know. If I didn't know more about the Ohio State team and I was just looking at these two programs, I think I would lean towards Texas being the favorite to win the national championship or being the number one team. What I'm saying here is the pressure is immense on Texas. The pressure is huge. Does that mean the pressure is any less on Ohio State? Man, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Because the truth is, while I admire the fact that these programs are scheduling each other, this is a bad, bad year for it, man. A terrible year to schedule each other. These two teams, when you look at these schedules, and I'll pull them up, I've got them side by side here. Nothing new to anybody who follows either program, but they're unbelievably difficult schedules, both of them. Texas might be the most difficult in the country. Ohio State's is a top 5-7, but it's only top 5-7 because so many more programs have difficult schedules now, as we've seen the, you know, the amount of quality teams that can kind of beat anybody else on any given Saturday has gotten more and more every year. So now you've got, you look at a schedule and you're like, okay, how many games look like coin flip games that could go either way? And then the second tier to me is, how many games could Ohio State realistically lose? And when you look at the Ohio State schedule, as far as kind of coin flip games, you got three. You got Texas, you got Indiana, you got Oregon. Ohio State's got Texas, Oregon, Indiana. Then games they could potentially lose. You've got USC, you've got Iowa, and you've got the game. That's six games right there that could potentially swing your season. That's a ton of games to swing on. How about Texas? How many coin flip kind of games do they got? Number one, Ohio State. Number 10, Oklahoma. Number 8, Texas A&M. Number 11, LSU. Number 9, Ole Miss. They essentially play five top 10 teams, man. That's crazy. Ohio State, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, LSU, and Texas A&M. Five top 10 teams. Throw in Tennessee. Throw in Florida. I mean, it's a banger. Missouri, ranked 25th right now. We'll see how that lasts. But an unbelievable schedule in a year that I'm sure they would love to not have this game on the schedule. Nonetheless, it is on the schedule. And it's on the schedule for Ohio State, too. And both of these teams, it's just huge. Ohio State got to win this one. You can't start 1-1 when you've got two other games that are coin flip games on the schedule at Indiana, Oregon at home. Ohio State will likely be favored by a couple of points at Oregon. Maybe not at Indiana. Maybe so. Who knows? But either way, we're talking that close. And if you go into those games, look, you got USC first before you play either of those. It's just a really difficult schedule. You got to win this one. You got to win this one. I think it's really, really important. I know a lot of people are choosing the Buckeyes to lose this one and then maybe run the table. I feel like this is so important because as the schedule goes on, right, you lose that second game. Should you lose that second game? Lose at Texas, lose the second game. The pressure is now immense, and you've always got the rivalry game looming. And while they look, you know, not so hot right now, who knows what they look like by the end of the season, and it's always the rivalry. We all know Texas missed the playoffs last year at 9-3, and Texas finished with a big win against Texas A&M. And after that game, Sark pitched his case for Texas being in the playoffs. Part of that pitch was the Ohio State game, that they went up, challenged themselves against Ohio State. And I agree with him up to that point. Then he tried to make it sound like they outplayed Ohio State, saying we had this many yards compared to them. And I'm like, hold up, man. Nobody watching that game really thought that Texas was like in control. And that's why they had many more yards. They were playing catch up, or trying to anyway. But he did do a lot of talking in the offseason about the playoff criteria and what they should be looking at. And I agree with him. I think that they absolutely should be looking at programs that test themselves and give the rest of the country the example of what programs are supposed to do and go play the best of the best in the out-of-conference. Those programs should be getting the benefit of the doubt. You know, games where the line's a toss-up. This game right now, you can take a position on this game or who you want to make the play, who you think will make the playoffs, who will win the conference over on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market, where you can trade those predictions in a live market. My position on this game, I'll tell you at the end of the show. But talking Ohio State, Texas right now, it's 50-50 on who wins. On Kalshi, you're trading against peers in the live market, meaning there is no house. And as the probability changes, you can buy in and out of your position, trade a draft pick, the game, whatever you want on Kalshi. Download the app using the code JUCK to get $20 when you trade $20. Kalshi, K-A-L-S-H-I, and trade on anything much more than sports. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory. So I totally agree with Sark when it comes to programs testing themselves, getting that benefit of the doubt when it comes to choosing who makes it to the playoffs. Like, I'm not saying a three-loss team, if they lose to a big-time program, should be given a pass for that loss. But if you're telling me you're stacking up a 9-3 team like Texas's resume last year, and it's true that Texas also lost to Florida, a bad Florida team, and also got their butt kicked by Georgia in their three losses. To say that losing the Ohio State game kept them out of the playoffs, I understand what they're saying because they didn't have to schedule that game. They had to play Florida. They had to play Georgia. They didn't have to play Ohio State. They elected to play it. So that choice to elect to play Ohio State kept them out of the playoffs. You can say that. That's a fair statement to make. But we also all know that they were terrible the first half of the season. If they were better the first half of the season, then things may have been different. They may not have lost the Florida game to begin with, but things might have been, they might have been looked at different or part of that conversation. But as it shook out last year, when you were looking at Texas or looking at Miami and Notre Dame, they just didn't stack up. Their resume didn't stack up. How do we make it so that those things do stack up and still get these good out-of-conference games scheduled? I don't know the answer. But I do know the Buckeyes have a chance to make the playoffs even with three losses this year. Nobody wants to bank on that. And to make sure that doesn't happen, they got to win this game. So what have we learned about these teams in week one? Not much, man. Not much you can really analyze, as they both played dog crap teams in week one. Texas played Texas State. Ohio State played Ball State. Arch Manning was so-so. Julian Same was amazing. One of the biggest takeaways from the Ohio State game, a lot of people on the Ohio State side very irritated with the offensive line, with the running game. We'll hear what Ryan Day has to say about that today. And Ohio State averaged 6.8 yards per carry on the day. Texas averaged 4.3 yards per carry in their game. And some people will say, well, take away the longest runs and then tell me what they did. Well, they only rushed for really this many yards per carry, as if those long runs don't count. They do, but I get the sentiment. However, you also now have to go and take the longest runs away from Hollywood Smothers and Relic Brown, right? That's only fair. If you look at their two top backs, Hollywood Smothers was 10 for 70, but he had a 45 yarder. That means he was 9 for 25 in 9 carries. Relic Brown, 11 for 34. He had a 21 yarder, which means he was 10 for 13. So I get that Ohio State fans not feeling great about the running game with that stats and the offensive line in game one, but imagine if you looked at that, man. That's not good. We're talking about two really good running backs. They were 20 for 59 combined without their two longest runs. Unacceptable. And when we talk about some other stats in the running game, Ohio State, 6.55 yards after contact. Texas, 2.7. Ohio State, 15 missed tackles forced. Texas, 7. In their 10-yard runs, Ohio State had 6. Texas had 5. So the bulk runs were roughly the same. Ohio State getting more yards per after contact and certainly more missed tackles forced, more than double, which is something that they weren't good at last year. Bo got better at it as the end of the season came down to winding down. Isaiah was the best at it. But as a team, as a group, Ohio State's running backs weren't too good at that last year. I think we're already seeing that they're better at it this year, and they'll continue to get better at it. So that's great. What are the keys for Ohio State to win this game? I think the absolute number one key for the Buckeyes to win this game is protection, protecting Julian Sand. As they roll out, which offensive line group are they rolling out with? Is it going to be option number one, which is what we saw start game number one against Ball State? That's with Ian Moore and Phil Daniels at tackle. Or is it going to be option number two, which is what we saw in series number three of game number one? That's Ian Moore at left tackle, Austin Saraveld at right tackle, Gabe Van Sickle at right guard. My opinion on who they should have gone with in the beginning of this year and who should be the number one was always getting your two best tackles out there, Ian Moore and Austin Saraveld. And the reason that I think that needs to be prioritized over starting the best interior three of Austin Saraveld, Luke Montgomery, and Carson Hinsman is that prioritizing tackles is what I think you need to do when you play in the biggest games. In the biggest games, to win a national championship, to make it through the playoffs, you need your two best tackles because you're going against guys like Reuben Bain last year. And this week, the potential defensive player of the year in the SEC, Colin Simmons, who did not do great against Ohio State last year. That really means nothing to me when it comes to this year, because this year, Pete Kwiatkowski's not there anymore. Will Muschamp is back. And Will Muschamp is an agent of chaos. Will Muschamp is going to try his damnedest to disrupt Julian Sain. That's, mission number one for him is to not let Julian Sain feel comfortable passing the ball against his defense. And that can bite him sometimes. He can give up some big plays sometimes because of it, but he's coming after Sain. And the strength of the Ohio State offensive line is the passing game. And you absolutely have to prioritize protection over what you feel might be your best rushing offense, in my opinion. So that said, I think you got to start Ian Moore and Austin Saraveld at tackle this week. Ryan Day, again, I'm sure he'll be asked about this quickly. He won't answer. We won't know until game day what they're going to roll out with, but I think he made it pretty clear. They'll be quick to change if things aren't going as planned. And Phil Daniels didn't have a great day on Saturday. That doesn't mean he doesn't have a good day this upcoming Saturday, because we've seen him have some really good days. But I sure don't want to see them risk it, because I think that that the option with Ian Moore and Austin Saraveld at tackle is the much better way to approach this game for sure. So the number one most important thing for a Buckeyes win, protect Julian Sain. Number two, the run defense. I think Ohio State can contain their running game and keep Arch Manning off schedule. And if they do that, I think Arch is going to make them pay in several instances with the weapons that he has at wide receiver. And this will be a higher scoring game than usual, higher scoring game than we're used to seeing these two play, certainly higher scoring than last year's 14-7. But I don't think that Arch Manning and Texas's passing game can keep up with Ohio State's. I don't think that's a recipe for them to win. So if Ohio State can stifle their running game, and that will obviously include Arch running the ball, which not sure how they're going to handle that yet, but he can certainly be lethal, particularly on third down. If the Buckeyes can stifle that rushing attack like Texas State was able to do, Arch Manning and that passing offense, I don't believe can keep up with the Ohio State passing offense. Number three, and our final big overarching a point of emphasis here, is Jeremiah Smith has got to be involved.
Jeremiah, what are some of the keys when you play such a dynamic receiver, and also just what is it that makes him so special?
Well, I mean, I think one, he garners your attention, he deserves our attention. You know, it's arguably the best player in college football, and you know, the challenge is with him, it's the size, speed, catch radius. You know, he's a big physical guy who can cover a lot of ground in a short amount of time. And it doesn't always look like it, but it almost feels like it. Like you can feel his presence on the field. I know I said this about Cam, but we were talking about Cam's catch radius. When you just talk about body structure, this guy looks like Julio Jones. This guy looks like A.J. Brown, like when it physically, and he can cover ground. And then because he's so strong, 50-50 catches are very difficult with him. And so, you know, you have to have a plan. But I think like anything, when you have a plan against somebody like him, you can't just throw all fastballs. You know, even as good of a fastball as you have, if that's all you got, sooner or later they're going to hit it. So we've got to be able to mix our pitches up and how we defend him and how we defend the scheme. Because, you know, Arthur and Ryan, they believe in running the ball, and they've got a good runner and a good O-line. They've got other weapons. And so we've got to be diligent in having our ability to throw different pitches and then be sound in the back end to make sure that you know, we're aware of where number four is. And he garners that. Like, there's not every game do you go into where you say, hey, we need to know where this guy is every.
But a Texas defense that has shut down Jeremiah Smith more than anybody else in the country in his entire career two times. Can you imagine the drive that Jeremiah must feel to dunk on these dudes? I mean, it must be huge. They're the only ones that can say that about him. Like, you couldn't do anything against us. The only ones in his whole career. And I really think that Jeremiah has to be involved to win this game. I think he has to be involved to win any of the big time games this year, because he's your best player. He's got to be involved. He can't just be a decoy. While I got a lot of faith in Devin McEwen and the chemistry that we saw from him and Julian Sain in week one, you know, that was week one against a not so great opponent. Jeremiah's the man. He's the best player in college football. He's extremely motivated by this, and he has got to be involved in the offense. He's got out here guys like our buddy Landon making videos calling Malachi Toney the best wide receiver in football. We'll talk to Landon about that claim on Thursday. But in a much higher scoring game with a lot more offense, a much more offensively driven game, which I think it's going to be, Jeremiah's got to have at least 8+ receptions. And I don't think it's going to be a problem for him to get there. So those are my three keys for a Buckeye victory. We'll see what Ryan Day has to say today at the press conference. And definitely we have some more to talk about here tomorrow based on what he has to say. But I can't wait, man. I can't wait. Again, I'm leaving Thursday. And if you're going down there, make sure to email me at juckonbucks@gmail.com. I'll let you know where we're going to be, myself and the Buckeye Insiders. You can join us over at BuckeyeInsiders.com. Please subscribe to the show if you have not. On the injury front, freshman Buckeye target running back Derek Cooper, freshman for the Horns, hurt his ankle, so he is not going to play this week. Neither is Cole Hudson. That is the NFL lineman who didn't sign a contract with the NFL. He's going to be ineligible, but it's through the NCAA, not based on the NFL situation. I don't know. Just a couple of updates that came from Sark earlier today. So anyway, appreciate you guys. I'll talk to you soon. Juggabucks.